We do welcome you here today. And as I've mentioned before, sometimes people who are visiting or are guests, it's hard to make sure that maybe personal things or private things that you have needs about, particularly spiritual things. If I can be assistance as the gatekeeper, I'd be glad to do that. I'm available after church. There's also my information, phone number, and email in the bulletin, but I'd be glad to connect you with other people that could be helpful as well. Who wants to be a millionaire? That show came on television almost 20 years ago today, August the 16th, 1999. It was such a popular show in the early days that ABC carried it for a while, three nights a week. People were really interested in, and some of you who were maybe aware of what was going on at the time, or right age is what I'm trying to say without being offensive, you could call up and actually try out for the show. Every adult in the country was given that opportunity to do that. Do you really want to be a millionaire? These guys look happy with the money, don't they? But probably all of us have had that experience of, is it really what I want? Is it really as helpful? Is it really as positive? Is it really what I sought? And does it have the payoff, literally, that I expected it to have? As we continue to work through the book of James, we move into the last chapter this morning. And James chapter 5 begins with a very difficult statement. Now listen, you rich people. Weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. Now, we could might think for a moment it might be fun to be rich until you read that passage. Nobody wants to be included in that passage. That's a very destructive description there. We don't know exactly who's being referred to in that section. A lot of fights about it. Many people, especially Bible scholars, conservative scholars, say this is the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the people back over in Jesus' time, and they use that based on chapter of verse 11 or verse 6 there, and that reference to the innocent one, or in other places the righteous one, and say this had to occur at the time of Jesus or the circumstances of Jesus. It also could be the people that are oppressing these refugees. And I mentioned before that these Jewish people are scattered into different places, and they may very well be oppressed when they're away from home. May also be that there are people within the Jewish community who maybe have a little bit more than some of the others, and so they may be behaving in that way. So it could be any number of particular groups. But whether we're looking at the primary group or not, the secondary application certainly applies to us. We don't want to look there and see ourselves. And when I looked at this passage, I couldn't help but think, well, what's the problem with being rich? What's the downside? What are the bad sides? And I came up quickly with a handful of things. And I'm going to try to just present some things really fast this morning. The reason is I didn't want to cut anything out, and the only way to do that is to go really fast. So I'm going to try to do that this morning. But one of the things that would scare you about being rich is that the passage would apply to you. These people who are being described here, and you hear people all the time, you hear people read this verse and say, well, the writer of this doesn't even know what he's talking about. Wealth doesn't rot. Gold and silver don't corrode. Those things don't even happen. Materialism, though, the material things of life certainly go away. And when we hoard wealth. The guy who mowed your fields didn't treat them right, took advantage of them, and that was damaging to them. And, you know, when we say mowed your fields, we think about riding lawnmowers. That's not how they mowed fields. The harvesters, did you pay a fair wage? These people were working incredibly hard. And some of them literally used up their physical lives in unfair working situations because the people who had the wealth didn't take care of them. If you're rich, you might start to believe the hype. I'm pretty smart. You don't get to be where I am unless you're pretty sharp. It reinforces all of that kind of stuff. Remember the Pharisee and the Sadducee in Luke chapter 18, where the Pharisee says, God, I thank you, I'm not like other people. That arrogance is just overwhelming. But when you start to have a lot, you can easily look at other people who don't have very much and say, boy, I'm glad I'm not like them. I'm glad I have so much more than they have. And what does it say about me to have so much more? I've mentioned to you before my friend who says, you know, most people would have trouble with a lot of money, but I believe, this is my friend talking, he says, I believe I'm the guy who could handle it. I think if God gave me massive amounts of money, I could handle the money well. And I've never said this to him, but as I was thinking about this lesson, I thought, yeah, but how differently would people treat you? How would they respond to you differently? I read not too long ago a young guy who had signed a big NBA contract, and he said he never knew how many relatives he had before that. People that came literally out of the woodwork. And you know that just having wealth would change the way people interact with you, the way that people would know you, the things that people would want from you. Your life would be turned over really, really quickly. You know, you might start to think like you could trust the money. Like the guy, the rich farmer. He says, I'll build those bigger barns. Now I've got everything saved up. I can just take my ease. And God, of course, calls him on that. But we get to the place where we can develop this sense of, well, I've saved enough, or I've earned enough, or I've invested enough, and the return has been in such a way that now I'm at the place where money is going to take care of me. Really? 1 John chapter 6, verse 17. Paul says to Timothy, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but rather to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds and be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Twice in that passage, Paul says to Timothy, command people who are rich. Command a certain attitude. Command a certain perspective. Command a certain approach. Because that's the truth of it. You can't put your hope in wealth, but oh boy, we can get caught up in that so easily. So easy to start to think that the money's always going to be there. We're always going to have this. All I got to do is take care of it. I just thought of this. As you go through the bank, it says insured by the federal government. That's kind of scary, isn't it? We think, oh, we have all this stability. After 9/11 and the days following 9/11, the financial stability of this nation was very, very shaken. It really wouldn't take all that much in comparison to really upset the financial balance. And we think we live in a strong place, and we do. But there's still a great fragile nature to the whole economic pursuit. Job knew this well. In Job chapter 27, verse 19, he lies down wealthy, but will do so no more. When he opens his eyes, all's gone. Goes to sleep at night a rich man and wakes up the next morning as a poor man. Is that possible? Well, Job stands as a testimony to the reality of that. In Proverbs chapter 23, verse 5, cast but a glance at riches, and they're gone. for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. You may have had that experience on some level. You may know people who've had that experience on a small or even on a large level that has looked up and their wealth had literally flown away. Where did it go? Where is it? One of the things that also happens to us when we're trying or wanting or pursuing wealth is you get to that place where you're willing to do almost anything to protect it. In Luke chapter 16, Jesus tells probably the least popular of his parables. It's a parable that a lot of people have really not focused or spent any real time with. The master comes to his manager and says, you're cheating me. I'm going to take your job away, so settle your affairs. And the manager begins to call in the debtors and say, how much do you owe my master? Well, I owe him 500 barrels of oil. Well, write 300. Or I owe him this, write less. And the owner finds out about it, and what's his response? Well, he's happy. All of the people in this parable are bad people. They're all shady characters. And Jesus sums all that up in Luke chapter 16, verse 8. It says, the master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. And then Jesus explains it. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. It takes a certain perspective. It takes a certain willingness to go to particular places in some situations. And so we look around and we say, I want to be as smart as all of these wheeler dealers. And that passage echoes in our minds because, you know, you get caught up in all of that. You're learning and doing and putting things into your soul and your life that maybe you really don't want to have there. Last but not least, you can easily forget that wealth is going to have an impact on your family. Several years ago when Sam Bradford went into the NFL, this was back before they had he had kind of cut off these outlandish rookie contracts. And I don't remember, it was somewhere like $190 million that he got in that first contract. And a sports writer wrote that nobody in Bradford's family would have to work for three generations. And my thought was, is that a good thing? Is that a positive thing? Now, I'm not being critical of Sam Bradford. It has nothing to do with him. He's just an illustration of somebody who got a whole lot of money. But there are quite a few people out there who try to track families that have a lot of money. And what they generally find is that the people who got the money, earned the money, developed the process to acquire the wealth, functioned relatively well. That second generation is usually very much involved with philanthropy, giving away money and sharing money. The key word to the third generation is drugs. There is an incredible increase in how many of those third generation wealthy kids are hooked up in drug culture. And it's easy to see what it would be like. What would it be like if every day you went out into life as a child or as a teenager, even when it came time to go to college? I don't have to do anything. I got money. My family's got money. And on all kinds of lesser scales, we benefit from learning. We benefit from working. That old analogy about the child that wants to help the butterfly out of the chrysalis, and the parent says, no, don't do that. It won't survive. It needs to struggle for itself to be strong enough to go forward. When we look at things and say, boy, I hope my kids never have to struggle, I think God whispers in our ear, you don't really want to say that. There's something about the process that's important. About 20 years ago, there was a person in our congregation, and she came to me and she said, hey, we have some friends, some people in our family that are coming, and they have a very bad situation, and I just thought maybe you might visit with them while they are here. They're going to be staying with us for a couple of days. And I said, sure. met them at the church building one night and stood out in the front because I, you know, wouldn't know, didn't know if they would know exactly where to go. And they drove up in Aston Martin. That's the only one that I've ever seen with my own eyes. For small talk, we talked about their beautiful home and their three vacation homes. We talked about the literally 4-month around the world trip that they were planning to go on soon. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I might like to trade places with these folks. Until they said why they're there. They were there because a couple of Christmases back, they were at one of their vacation places. Their family had gathered there. They had 2 children and 4 grandchildren. And one of the grandchildren sexually assaulted one of the other grandchildren. These 3 families, at that point in time, had never been together since that moment. By law, the 2 grandchildren couldn't even be in the same place at the same time, the perpetrator and the victim. These folks would have given anything. There wasn't a check big enough. I honestly believe that if you had said to them, if you'll give it all away, you can go back to being where you were before, I think they would have done it in a heartbeat. I'm not being judgmental because they kept saying over and over again, we indulged too much. We did the wrong things. We weren't as disciplined as we ought to have been. And they really, really had really difficult things and painful things to say about themselves. You know, sometimes God keeps us from things because he knows better than we know. My friend says, oh, I'd be the guy who can handle it. What about your family? Is that really going to be a positive for your family? Ecclesiastes chapter 2, starting in verse 24 and getting down through verse 26. Solomon there says, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? It's pretty simple. It's pretty basic. We're going to do just the simple things of life, but we're going to find enjoyment in doing that. And then verse 26 really shakes you. To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. You want those 3 things? Boy, I do. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. We often don't see it that way. We often wonder, well, why is God like this other person so much? Why has he put so much blessing into another life? Well, you may be sitting there right now thinking, boy, I'm glad I'm not rich. That's not a good thing to be. Well, let me scare you just a little bit. Credit Suisse, in their global wealth report last year, 2018, so these numbers are not from a long time ago. They're about as nearby as you could be. They endeavored to find out what kind of resources you'd have in order to be ranked in the 1% of wealth in the world. Now, they looked at it from a number of different ways. They looked at it from net worth. They looked at it some other directions. But the thing that really has gotten the most attention is they looked at annual income. Now, how much annual income would you have to have to find yourself in the upper 1% of the world's wealth? Go ahead. $32,400. If you make more than that every year, you're in the upper 1% of the world's wealth. Luke chapter 12, verse 48. But the one who does not know and does these things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. And then he says what scares me. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who is entrusted with much, much more will be asked. There was an elderly man at the church in Guthrie. He got tired of the telemarketers calling, as all of us do at times. But this guy decided to take a different track. And when somebody was calling, they'd say, "Mr. Daniels, we can save you $100 a month on your insurance." He would say, "I don't need to save money. I got all the money I need." And the telemarketer would be like, "Well, you don't want to, this is a good deal." He said, "I don't need any deals. I got plenty of money." And he became kind of, you viewed it as a game a little bit. He would say, "Oh, somebody from so-and-so called me last night when I told them I had all the money. I didn't need to save any money." They really don't know what to say. They really don't know what to respond. But the interesting part about it is, after he had done that for a while, he said, "You know, this is really freeing. This really is disconnecting me from the thought that I needed so much more money. And because I'm saying to these people that are calling me, oh, I got plenty. I'm okay. I'm happy. I'm content." So it starts to affect the way I look at life and the way I see life and the way I approach other people. If you were watching NBC last night, their national news, they did a little thing at the end of the news. This lady had gone into a Payless shoe store. And as you know, Payless is going out of business, and they were having a big clearance sale. She was buying shoes for her three children, and one of the kids came and said, "Mom, I got a friend at school, and he likes this kind of shoe, and yet probably wouldn't be able to afford this shoe. Could we buy him some shoes?" And Mom said, "Sure." And if I remember right, a couple of the other kids said similar kinds of things, and the lady just had an idea. She walked up to the manager, and she said, "What would it cost to buy every shoe in here?" And he said, "Well, I don't really know. Let me check." A couple of hours later, he called her up and he said, "It'd be so many dollars." They didn't say how many. She said, "Fine, I'll buy them all." 1,500 pairs of shoes. She decided that they were going to give them away. I believe it's August the 8th. And when she started to advertise, people started calling her saying, "Could we bring some shoes? Could we give you money to buy some more shoes?" And so all the children in that community are going to have a day when they get to have free shoes. It was a wonderful thing to do. And look at how positive it became. You know, so often when we talk about wealth, we emphasize the guilt. And there's no way to talk about it if you don't stimulate some of that. But the true reality to it is, the more things we have, the more we're blocked from God. And the more we are distorted in our view of God, and the more altered our perspective of what God can and will do for us in our lives. There are ways to get past that. And there are ways to see more clearly if we'll allow ourselves to go in that direction. This morning, if there's something that needs to be different in your life, I encourage you to change it. May not be something public. It may be totally private. It may be an attitude. It may be a practice. It may be a point of view. But this morning, if there's something you need to do publicly, we'd be glad to help you with that while we stand and sing.